I'd like to welcome you to the session this afternoon, meeting information security awareness needs and the campus likes it. That'll be interesting, I'm sure. Our presenters are Teresa Banks, the Senior Program Coordinator at the University of Arizona, Kelly Bogart, Senior Information Security Specialist at the University of Arizona, Michael Brickner, Training and Development Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and Tanya Choice, Information Security, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. To remind you of a couple of things, there are online evaluations. Make sure you fill those out afterwards. And if you are actually tweeting the session, you can use the #security11 tag. Just got done with a different conference. It makes it really confusing. Okay. Go ahead.
Thanks, Ben, for that introduction. Hi, everybody. Hello to the online audience. How's everybody doing today? All right, thunderous response, that's all right. First session after lunch, so you might be contemplating a nap, but we will try to keep you awake. Welcome to Meeting Information Security Awareness Needs and the Campus Likes It. We want to present to you two sort of homegrown information security awareness training programs, one from the University of Arizona, one from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Certainly a lot of similarities between the two. They both have online components. They also have assessments built in, and we certainly cover similar topics. I'd say the main difference is the UW-Milwaukee program is sort of done on a voluntary basis, where Arizona's came out of a state mandate. So I'd invite you to contrast that difference and the other differences as we go along. So we'll start with some introductions. Go ahead, Tanya.
Hello, my name is Tanya Choice Henry. Again, I am with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I am the Information Security Liaison, and basically what that means is that I do pretty much anything related to information security, from risk assessments to compliance issues and privacy issues to risk mitigation, you name it, I do it. And of course, one of the major parts of my job is to educate the campus regarding information security awareness.
Tanya. And Mick Brickner, I'm a training and development coordinator, and I work in the professional development area of our centralized IT department. I am not a security professional, so I'm learning a heck of a lot today about security, and we'll be learning more for the rest of the day and tomorrow, certainly. My main responsibilities are teaching non-credit courses on various IT topics, software, that type of thing, to faculty, staff, and students. I also work in the realm of e-learning, online training, and help documentation and things like that. So let me give you a little background about UW-Milwaukee, a little context in our situation here. Our enrollment is a little over 30,000 students, about 25,000 of those being undergraduate. We actually enroll more Wisconsin residents than any other university in the state. And we're just one of two public doctoral universities in the state as well. So we have about 3,600 faculty and staff on campus. About 150 of those are centralized IT staff members. And we also have about 190 student IT staff that work for the centralized department as well. So on any given semester, the students tend to outnumber the staff members. So we have 12 schools and colleges, and you can see the undergraduate, master's, doctoral programs listed there. In terms of location, you can see the picture. We're sort of a compact university, limited to just a couple blocks. We've sort of been expanding to other areas of the city recently, which certainly puts more of a demand on IT services and what Tanya and I do. And that really was what sort of prompted the need to do sort of an online awareness, information security awareness training program. So the main issue, Tanya approached me beginning of last year, 2010, with this idea that she had for some online training in the realm of information security. She came and spoke with me, a training type of person, and I was immediately interested because it was an issue that everybody sort of knew about. She emphasized collaboration and certainly the instructional designer, subject matter expert type of relationship that I think is pretty much necessary to have a useful type of training program like this. So all of these issues we have listed here sort of centered on this idea that we had increasingly numerous and complex information security requirements, something I'm sure many of you can identify with. They were coming from various levels, federal, state, the University of Wisconsin system, as well as the university itself. And we started noticing a real overall lack of awareness around these different information security policies. So people either didn't know that these policies existed, or maybe they knew, but they really didn't understand the implications of the policy or how it affected their roles and responsibilities on campus. On top of that, the policies were stored in multiple locations, so some on the information security website, some in Department of Enrollment Services, Human Resources, Records Management, sort of all over the place. And some of them had multiple policies on each website, and they may or may not have been up to date, depending on the website that you went to. So the delivery methods were pretty inconsistent, and we wanted to create an online training program that addressed those issues and built in a way to sort of track comprehension and track the people who've went through all the training. Okay, so I'll turn it over to Tanya now.
So our overall goal was to provide the UWM campus community with consistent, accurate, and auditable training for secure information handling. Of course, we used several different methods of training. Initially, we did in-person training, classroom training, but for our campus, we found that online training definitely met our needs better. Online training is, of course, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our constituency would be able to take the training at home or at work, and it's much easier to track the information that's online. If it's in one location, we found that we're able to keep it consistent and current. So a big question for this audience is, why should the Information Security Office be involved with this training? Well, let's face it, we're the one that cleans up mess, right? So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we would actually educate people in advance. We wanted to be more proactive instead of reactive. We're charged with protecting the data, mitigating unauthorized access and use to information. Specifically in our office, we are charged with informing and educating the campus regarding information security issues. And we work very closely with some of our campus partners, including legal, HR, and audit, to make sure that we're in compliance with the applicable laws and policies. So it was with those policies in mind that we chose the initial subjects for our training. The acceptable use policy is something that's very important on our campus. It is provided to every faculty, staff, and member when they're first hired, and that's the only time that they ever saw it. So unfortunately, one of the things that's one of my biggest pet peeves is that people get in trouble for doing something that they were not supposed to do. They're like, well, I didn't know I couldn't do that. Well, they got the policy. We know that they did. But now we have a way of giving them the training. They do have to complete the assessment, which shows that they acknowledge their responsibilities under this policy. So at this point, you know, if they do something wrong, then we can say, well, we show that you did the training. And maybe you need a refresher course. Identity theft and the employee confidentiality acknowledgement forms are also very important on our campus. We deal with a lot of confidential data on our campus, as I'm sure you do as well. We do not have a mandatory confidentiality agreement across campus, but you'd be very surprised that at the number of people who are taking advantage of this particular training. We also made it the training somewhat customizable, so the participants can actually choose some of the subjects that they want to take based on their particular areas of interest or their daily work jobs. For example, FERPA, HIPAA, Gramm-Leach-Bliley, records management, all of those are customizable. They can complete those trainings or not based on the job position that they currently have. Very, very important is to get project champions for a campus-wide initiative. For us in particular, it was a pretty easy sell for our CIO. For one thing, report to him, so he knew that I was up to this already. But we did provide him with selling points for the project itself. We wanted to make sure that when he went out to the campus and spoke and kind of, you know, promoted the program, that he knew, you know, the benefits for the campus overall. So, of course, the main thing was mitigating risk. We wanted to make sure that that was one of the things that got out there right ahead of the training itself, the mitigating risk, and, of course, educated users are more safe. We needed to identify partners to share the costs for the training program. I don't know about you, but we had no additional funds for this training. So, you know, our day jobs continued. We combined resources across a few different departments to make this happen. And we did collaborate with marketing materials, and some of our other partners were able to assist with providing marketing. One of our major contributors to the training program was our employee development department, and they actually house the training, do the tracking for us for completion, and they do some advertising for us on a weekly basis. So we covered the information that was applicable to the campus and why it was important for campus use, and then we took a look at what's in it for me for the end users. Of course, there has to be something that's going to promote them to use this training and to complete the training, especially because it is not mandatory. So we created the certificate in information security, and as you can see, it's presented to a smart user once they're done. The training itself does promote awareness of information security. It does provide information on how to safely handle data in the system, and most importantly, it points out their specific responsibilities related to confidential data.
So after the getting started phase, it was time to start creating this training. And I can give you a little perspective from being an instructional designer, e-learning type of person. You're going to probably need some sort of software tool like Captivate or Articulate. Not only is it great at the online training presentation type of design, but it also includes an assessment building tool, which you can either just have as sort of checkpoints throughout the tutorial, or maybe it's something that's exported to a learning management system, or even emailed to like a supervisor or something like that. So there's a lot of options. On top of Captivate or Articulate, one of those tools, there are some other ones that you might need. Photoshop being a good one, great for backgrounds, creating images, editing images, all that sort of stuff. Adobe Flash is really nice. It has sort of a steep learning curve, but it does work pretty nicely with Captivate, as Captivate puts out Flash-based files. I put Audacity on there because if you're planning on having audio, and I'd probably suggest that you do, you might need some sort of audio recording software. Audacity is a freeware type of program you can go and download from their site, and it's just a lightweight audio recording program that we use on campus. If you are putting audio in there, some people like it, some people don't, so make it easy. I would suggest to turn it off or on. Our needs for audio were actually pretty minimal. We wanted to keep file sizes down because loading times can be a pain. So I knew that the audio quality wasn't going to be spectacular or anything anyways, so I just reserved a meeting room, grabbed a laptop and a USB microphone, and that's how I got our audio recording done. I add Camtasia on there because you might need to do something with like video screen capture. Captivate comes with that capability. Camtasia is just another tool you could use. I know there's some other free online resources, but not all of them allow you to just take what you've recorded and put it in your presentation. So I might investigate free options and then look at Captivate or Camtasia. I put PowerPoint on there because if you're not planning on having assessments or doing anything real advanced with interactions or animations or anything like that, you might be able to get away with just doing sort of like an automated PowerPoint. Again, it totally depends on your needs, just like all of these. It also depends on who's charged with doing the training. So in my case, I had most of these tools being an instructional designer. If you're planning on doing it from the information security office, you might not have access to these tools or the resources to get them. So that's something to weigh as well. In terms of time commitment, it basically took Tanya and I meeting on a weekly basis all of last summer to get our first 6 tutorials up and running. So give or take 1.5, 2 tutorials per month, something like that. And towards the end of the summer, we were probably meeting more like twice a week, something like that. But basically every week I would use the time I had to create the tutorial, and then we would get together and meet. We'd verify the information. Tanya, being the subject matter expert, could tell me if I was paraphrasing something incorrectly or citing the wrong policy or information, that sort of thing, because I was one of the people who did not know much about the policies as well while I was going through and creating them. And certainly when you're making a presentation or a training, you're trying to paraphrase and present things in a way that's easy to understand, so you want to make sure you're not changing the meaning or the spirit of the policy, basically. Certainly revising was another aspect of these meetings, as well as testing the tutorials, making sure they were working the way we wanted them to, developing a script. Again, we did audio, so not only coordinating the audio with the text and captions on the screen, but also to give it just a level of narration for transitions and things like that. We did want to have some examples of the training. That would have been great, but we just didn't have time. So we put an example up on the resources page for this session on the EDUCAUSE website, so I would encourage you to go and look at that and borrow whatever ideas from it you can. After we had the training created, we had it up, and we did sort of a soft, quiet rollout that we that coincided with our Cybersecurity Awareness Month on campus at the end of the summer. So we had to start letting people know about it. And we did that in basically two ways: formal advertising and then just sort of word of mouth, getting the word out by talking to people. In terms of advertising, I think just about every seat there's a brochure with the UWM logo on it. That was the first formal piece of advertising that we sent to every faculty and staff member on campus. So every single person got one of those in their mailbox. We had a huge banner in the student union, as well as posters and flyers, that sort of thing. In terms of word of mouth then, Tanya was able to present the training at a IT's for You session, which is sort of a campus forum led by our CIO that people come to ask questions about technology and that sort of thing. In terms of the response, it's been overwhelmingly positive so far. On the screen is some of the written feedback that we've gotten. I'll let you read that for yourself. Certainly I've gotten some good in-person feedback. Again, overwhelmingly positive, but also great ideas for improvement, updating, revising, that sort of thing. It's been about 6 months or so since we rolled it out, and I think we have a little over 1,000 views of the tutorials. Or trainings, and we want to continue to get that number up, certainly, so we're going to continue to do some things to do that. We've also had some other successes that have been sort of key and reassuring that so far it's working, although they're hard to sort of wrap numbers around. Really, it came down to once people took the training and they saw the value in it, they started getting other people to do it, or at least suggesting it. So right now, we are in the process of rolling this out on a mandatory basis to all of our centralized IT staff, and the wheels are sort of in motion for that right now. We've also been requiring the confidentiality acknowledgement tutorial be viewed and passed successfully by all student IT staff before they begin working. And then some supervisors in decentralized IT have recommended it for their staff, and even some non-IT people have gotten into the act, the graduate school, human resources, payroll are all making at least the information security certificate or parts of the training mandatory as a part of their employment.
We are very pleased to announce that our training does have additional functionalities that we did not anticipate. The training, again, is required for access to some confidential data currently, and it's really a nice program because basically at login, there's a query that's sent to the training program itself to see if the applicable training has been completed. If it has not, then the training then their login goes directly to the training for completion, and if it has, then the login proceeds to process. Some of our campus partners are now creating their own online trainings to complement our trainings, including internal audit, records management, and safety assurances. And we have recommended that researchers use some of the trainings for as a part of their data security plan, which is very important for federal grants. Of course, there were challenges and hurdles that we had to go over while we were creating the training. Obtaining resources was pretty important because, again, there was no funding. We had to find the time to collaborate. Obviously, there were our day jobs continued, so we had to squeeze this in when and where we could. As Mick mentioned previously, presenting and paraphrasing the policies was very important because we did not want to misconstrue the understanding of the policies themselves. We're in the process of automating the certificates. That's currently a manual process. And we have specifically scheduled time to update and maintain the trainings themselves. What's next for our campus is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which is the illegal file sharing law. And we currently offer that training on D2L, but we're going to roll that into our online training. And there are some increased use for access management. In June, the training will be rolled out for centralized IT staff. And of course, we'll refresh the presentation when we can. So we invite you to check out the training, information security certificate at uwm.edu or security at uwm.edu. It's actually on the flyers that you have in your seats and the promotional brochure that's available in your seat as well. Again, I'm Tanya Choice Henry, and this was Mick Brickner, and it is my pleasure to introduce our counterparts at Arizona, Teresa and Kelly.
Don't trip on that. Hello. So my name is Kelly Bogart. I work for the University of Arizona. I'm a senior information security specialist. What does that mean? It just means I have a passion for this stuff. I'm presenting with our senior program coordinator. I'm going to cover initially kind of why we had to do it and the content gathering and that stuff, more the subject matter expert on this. And then Teresa's going to go through the logistics when you roll out a mandatory program, all that's involved with that. So hopefully you'll find a lot that we have to say beneficial. So it's mandatory. Yippee! That was my thing for 10 years. I really wanted to get in front of every single employee and up until a mandatory requirement, which came down because we had a security performance audit from our state auditor general who said the three universities have to do this. Until then, it was pounding on doors, please let me in, having, you know, events, getting people to come, you know, when they had the time, which, you know, we know we're all busy. So mandatory is great, but along with that, you want to make sure that you're not just putting something out there that people are going to come to and you're going to say because it's the policy, because it's the law, you know, and this is what you do. So you really want to make sure that when you get their attention, that they understand who your office is, what you have to offer, and, you know, what they need to be concerned about and doing as employees of your university. So let's talk a little bit about university. Kind of wanted to, you know, give the a little bit about the statistics about what makes up our university. I don't know how you guys do it with only 3,500 faculty staff because we have a lot of employees. But this is basically what makes up our demographics for the university, about 38,000 students when you combine the undergraduate and grad. And then we have the professional. So we have between our faculty, staff, and students in terms of employees that we knew kind of our possibilities for that mandatory training, about 15,000. Certain positions that we know aren't going to find any merit in going through a cybersecurity training, your custodial staff, your maintenance staff, so we can throw out, we figure, about 3,000 or so. So we have about 12,000 employees that need to be trained. And you got auditors saying, show us that you're doing it. Show us that you're doing it. So the challenge for us was, how do we roll out this mandatory training to a campus community that large make people actually, you know, walk away with something valuable and change the culture is ultimately what we're trying to do. And to make it interesting and relevant, and to make sure that they find something that they can walk away and they will change a habit as soon as they walk away. And then you got to get the word out and you got to get the buy-in. Even though it's mandatory, you still want people to understand the importance of it. We did get those that were dragging, kicking, and screaming, but they would come up at the end and say, thank you. I was so dreading this, but thank you so much. So, you know, success there for us. And then, of course, the dreaded tracking of the completion. Teresa's going to talk about that. That was fun, but it happened. So we had ultimate goals that we had to, you know, had put in place. So what do we want to make sure? We want to make sure that we have that campus-wide understanding of the U of A policies. You do want to make sure that they understand what the policies are at the university, requirements that we have on some of the different, you know, the data elements and those things, as well as roles and responsibilities, so that everyone understands that they do play a role here in the securing of a campus. Understanding what the cyber threats are, and then the best practices for making sure that they have the right security measures in place, or that their technologist isn't just doing things because they want to, but because it's important. And then ultimately, we want to make sure also, because things will happen even when you have security in place. So it was just as important to make sure that they understand how to detect if something's possibly wrong and how to react to that. What do I do? And ultimately, we're hoping that that builds a more secure campus. And we're already seeing major effects, and we'll talk about that. So for me, again, I felt like this is my only chance to make to get in front of every employee and make them understand that I am talking to you, that this is important for you. It's important for all of us. So we had to get the message out, the message that it is everyone's responsibility, that it's not just about technology, because I think many times in our particular office, we call it Information Security Office. We do not say IT security, because a lot of people, if you say that, they hear technology, they're like, yeah, somebody else is doing that for me, right? So you want to make sure that they do have an understanding that it's not just about that technology. That technology is a key role, but unless they understand, you know, how it's interacting, how not to circumvent it, it can be pretty problematic. So not only do we talk about the technical and the physical security measures, we also get into the administrative, the people and the policy, helping them understand how that process is just as important as that technology or those physical controls, making sure those things are in place. Make sure that we're covering not only just the protection measures, but also the detection and the reaction, because it's really, really important for people to know if something goes wrong, how do I know or even think to know, and how do I react to that? So for us, the first thing I always consider is the why. For us, the why is like so much more time for us is spent on having people really understand why it's important, why they need to know particular elements of that. So the WIFM, what's in it for me, is something we cover, and we cover in large detail, I would say, at the beginning. Make sure that they do understand it can happen to them, you know, even in their home environments. You know, they need to have an understanding that it really can happen to anyone, that everyone is a potential target, that it's about opportunity. When you have 2 billion people connected to the internet, once you've, you know, connected yourself, you're an endpoint and you're an opportunity for a hacker for lots of reasons. We know there's lots of reasons that they're looking for endpoints. We focus on the university data elements and the policy. We make sure that they understand that these are things that can apply with your home computer. These are things that apply to your own personal data. When you talk about data and you start talking about, well, we have payment card industry requirements and we have these health protected requirements and we have these student. If you start talking to them like a parent, do you care that your son or daughter's records are kept private? Yes. Do you care that somebody's protecting your credit card information? Yes. Do you care that your, you know, health information is protected? It starts really hitting home to them, and they start really understanding the importance of the data that they are actually handling. It's not just data to do their job, but it's data that's very important to the individual. Protecting your personal information. So we go into a little bit more detail on identity theft. One of the things that I talk about in my live sessions is I've been a victim of some kind of identity theft 4 times. I'm a security professional. I'm not embarrassed to say that. I had people come up and say, you shouldn't say that. The point is, even with all the protection measures I have in place, my data is everywhere. So, you know, that really hammers in on that protection and that detection. Sooner you detect something, the sooner you react to it, the more minimal the impact can be many times. The longer it goes on, sometimes the larger the impact. The 90-10 rule, I'm kind of a different being. I really like to stress the 90-10 rule. I think it's at this point maybe. I've seen other people say 80-20. I've seen somebody else say 90-10, but I think I've kind of jumped on that bandwagon all by myself. But I believe that information security is 10% technology and 90% people in process, administrative. Because even in the technology realm of things, having people understand that you have to have the right IT people, that you have to acquire the right technology, that you have to have somebody configuring that correctly, that you have to monitor it, you have to manage it. Those are people in process. Those are not technology. Without having that people in process in place, your technology is not doing much good. So the why really comes out. I hope you can just hear it in a little bit I'm telling you. So imagine my end users out there. So we've covered the why. So the other important thing, once you can get them with the why and they really understand why they need to know this, why they're interested in it, you really got to instill the other elements, the knowledge and the skill and the attitude. The knowledge, what do you want me to do? Because most of the people, by the time I get done talking about what's happening and how they, you know, why they should care, they're like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? So we go into pretty good detail on the what do you do. We get in the top 10 tips for end users, whether it be at work or at home. And we do some on the how. We don't have a lot of time to get into the how, but we lead them off into a page for each one of our top 10s that can give them more information. Once I have you and you understand a little bit more about what you need to do, I know you're going to find a way to find the how. And the last thing that we, you know, ultimately that culture change, it takes the want. It takes the want in the individuals to actually go away. And we know we're instilling that because a lot of our users are saying, can my family watch these? Can my, you know, can I tell my students? And so we're getting a lot of other people that are not required to take it, taking it. So before we implemented the mandatory training, we feel like we were somewhere in this. These are kind of like what we put together a long time ago, like levels of, you know, how do you, we're kind of stuck there. And I would say that we're clearly at acknowledgement for the majority of the part. I think we had a lot of people that knew, oh yeah, there's that office over there that has policies, and oh yeah, I know there's antivirus. So we were pretty much at a level 2, and I will say that we're, you know, right here, I think, after the training, we've kind of reached where it's more common practice. We definitely have more people thinking about processes, thinking about data they're handling. It's maybe a little bit shifted over, still kind of ranging over towards the 3, but we've seen quite a bit of progress, and Teresa will talk a little bit about some of those symptoms that we know we've seen progress.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly. My name is Teresa Banks, and again, I'm the Senior Program Coordinator in the Information Security Office at the University of Arizona, and I'm so happy to be here, and welcome to our people online, too. We haven't said it in a while. We want to make sure you know that we know you're out there, which is why the camera is on. I'm not thrilled about that. So here we go. Identifying the stakeholders was a really important thing for us to do. If we were going to educate in the neighborhood of 12,000 people on campus, we had to figure out a way to get the word out. And so it started definitely with our stakeholders, from the president on down. The middle box there, the deans, directors, and department heads, that sometimes can be the toughest nut to crack because you're getting into the faculty, And they sometimes you look at the admin people as just somebody who's going to do one more thing. And what we really, our office has really become something of really focusing on being a service organization to the campus, helping them to understand that that's why we're here, that we're here to help them do the mission of the university. And then finally, our governance organizations, the Faculty Senate, appointed and classified staff professionals, getting the word out to them and helping them to understand that this is something that will help them in their jobs. So we worked with our communication team. They helped us figure out ways to get the word out. And they told us, well, they've now upped it to 8 times 8 ways, but I just stuck with the 7 times 7 ways. The first way that we focused on getting the word out was sending out an initial memo to all of our deans, directors, department heads, and then follow-up memos to just let them know about progress, updates in where we were at with the training. As well, we have 2 groups on campus, our net managers, and then information security liaisons who are in our departments all over campus, and they work with our office. I'm the coordinator for that group, and so we work very closely with them in getting the word out. As well, we had face-to-face meetings. We, our ISO, who's sitting in the second row there, Kathy Bates, went on the road and did some meetings with colleges and departments. And as well, we had some meetings with the governance organizations and, of course, with our ISLs and our net managers. We also have a weekly employee newsletter that we managed to push a couple of stories into, and that was one more venue for getting things out. We also, our office has a monthly newsletter, and every single month from 2 months before we launched the all-employee on through now, we've given an update every single month, so we just continue to hammer it, and believe it or not, then we have our website, of course, but believe it or not, with all of that, I still have people going, do I need to do this? Yeah, you do. And it, and the thing is, they do. They come back, and they're really glad that they did, which is great. So we did have a few other challenges. My challenges were, there is, with all of these employees and all of these students, there is no central method for tracking employee completion for training. So it's not just our training, but it's all of the other regulatory trainings that have to take place. But it has led to an effort now to develop something on campus. So we have a group who actually are uniting to do this, which I can't tell you how grateful I am. Because it takes a tremendous amount of time for our office to go ahead and do that tracking for a live and online training, and then get the word out to all of our units. We don't have resources either. With these state universities, we just keep getting the cuts. But that's okay. We had hard and fast deadlines, but we figured out a way to do this. Luckily, we have a boss who lets us think outside the box, which is really good. So we did do both live and online sessions. Kelly went on the road and did quite a bit of that. I did a few sessions myself, and we actually had some of our ISLs helping us. So that got the ball rolling until we really got our online in place and working well. And the last thing is communication. Like I said, you cannot have too much. It's a huge challenge to continue to get that communication out. But eventually, people know who you are, and that's a great thing. Our methodology, as I said, we did live sessions. We did quite a few in high-capacity venues all over campus. We had an online registration that was set up for us by our workshop and training team at the university. Basically, they do what MIC does at the University of Arizona. And so there was a place where they could register using a single sign-on, and that was a great way for me to get the tracking information. And then we also had departmental sessions, and we continue to invite departments to do something like that. We invite them to go ahead and have us come in, and we can kind of tailor the sessions then. And again, Kelly did a lot of those. I did some. We had our ISLs helping us with that. So we managed to reach over 3,000 people that way, which was great. Then we had our online. We set up a web page, of course. Why wouldn't we? And we set it up with three different formats for a reason. The first thing that we ended up having to do, of course, was set up a PowerPoint. And then from the PowerPoint, then I used Articulate, and we were able to produce an audio version so people could just use the flash version and go through. But we also posted the PowerPoint version. And then we also worked with our Disability Resource Center so that all employees, even those with disabilities, also had access to this training. Come on. Yeah, it was. Oh, that's because it's the quizzes. The dreaded quizzes. We actually had people who came to the live training because they were afraid of the quizzes, even though they were really, really easy. But, you know, who wants to take a test? So we actually were able to set up a separate web page, Drupal page, and set up three Drupal quizzes, and that allowed us to do a sign-on using NetID and password, and that was how I ended up tracking things. What would happen is I would get all of the results for, we had three separate quizzes, and so I would get all the results. I would download them in a CSV file, marry them with information about the employees, and then I would be able to send out tracking lists to all of our departments to let them know where they were at in the completion process. And that continues today. And our response has been really great. I'm so proud of the fact that we have a 95% satisfaction rate, which is pretty remarkable considering this is mandatory. Yes, we had a few negatives, but we did. We had quite a few people saying, I really didn't want to do this. But I enjoyed it, I got something out of it, and I learned something to do, and can my children do this too? And yes, please, have them do it. It's a good idea. Some of the successes of our program. This is where we were at as of March 28th, 10,475. So that's since last June. We have that much completion. We still have a little bit more to go, but we think that's pretty doggone good considering the distributed nature of our campus. We've had a lot more web page traffic, and that's good, especially our top 10. We have our top 10 keys to security. Those pages have gotten many, many hits, which we figure people are going on there to learn the how, which is great. We have a lot more phone calls to our office, and which is great, too. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking to our users and different people, and then, we're out there. People know we're there, and we're there to serve them, and it's just a wonderful experience. We're just having a blast doing this. Our next step is to do role-based annual refresher courses, so we will have something separate for regular staff, for faculty and researchers, and then something for IT staff. So that's our next step, because we do have to do these mandatory annual refreshers. And we did set up, we posted a couple of resources on the EDUCAUSE page, but as well we set up our own page on our website so that you could go there. Our trainings are not a secret. You can get into all of them and go ahead and take a look, and if there's something you can use, by all means, give us a call. No, you would only mess them up if you did the quizzes, and you can't do that. You cannot take the quizzes, so you're okay there. And now we'll take some questions. We have about 15 minutes for questions. And we can take questions from the online audience as well. Yes.
Here. So we did deal with our disability resource.
Yeah.
Is this something different? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, just wondering if you had closed captioning to go along with the spoken word.
Oh, we had notes in Articulate. When you open up our flash versions, you will see there are three tabs. There's an outline, and then there are the notes. So everything that you hear me saying on there, you read, too.
And that is the same with the training that we provide as well. You can view the training with or without the audio. Another thing that we did not mention previously is that at the end of the training completion, you actually do get a copy of the applicable policy for printing. So we want to make sure that you get that parting gift as well.
So he's asking about, have we had any measurements of success? Is that what you're basically asking?
Outside of this completion of the training.
So outside of the training, have we seen any measurements of success or had any metrics? So for us, we're definitely, Teresa kind of alluded to, we've got a lot more questions coming in. We have, you know, where they can send us questions. We have people picking up the phone and calling. We are now welcome to departments like... I mean, people are really seeing us as not the stick, but somebody who can actually come in and, you know, we're balanced. We're not going to come in and say everybody has to do this, but so we are seeing it in small ways. I don't think that we have anything monumental that we can hang our heads on. But I will say that you will, as you get more people aware and you tell them that they need to react, detect and react, you're gonna hear about more incidents. So. That will be a success measure for you.
On our campus, we did receive some great feedback from areas across campus. I can't say that we're able to identify any specific measures just yet, but we do have several departments that are making some of this training mandatory for their staff, including our graduate school, and they handle a lot of research for our campus, actually the majority of it. So some of the successes are actually the partnerships that we're gaining out of this presentation.
Absolutely.
Of the training.
Hi, this is Shannon, and I want to get a couple of points from the online audience. And when you guys answer up there, try to get close to the mic so that they can hear, all right? Okay. You got a lot of great tweeters going on in the room. They've made some great comments. We have one group, the University of Vermont Information Security Operations team and guests, so they're in a big room watching you.
All right.
And they wanted to know from from Michael and Tanya, they want to know, does your InfoSec office deal with PCI DSS matters, and if so, does your training touch upon PCI DSS at all?
Well, unfortunately, yes, we do deal with that. It's very complex, and to be quite honest, we don't have an online module for that just yet. It will probably be in our next round of trainings. We're working closely with our audit department and our comptroller for those trainings, and it's just so complicated that we're trying to be very careful with what we put out there regarding that.
Scott, he's had his hand up for a while.
How do you deal with the hard to convince people, I think it's tenured faculty like that, that just really aren't interested at all? Or that at some point you have to convince them? And what is the mechanism of convincing them that they really need to?
That's where you have to do grass tops.
Could you repeat the question, please?
The question is, how do you convince those hard-to-convince skeptics out there who are do not need this kind of training and their tenured faculty, things like that? Yeah. So that's where it really helps to have convinced the deans and the department heads that this is something you really want to do. I'm still getting emails going, well, the only person who hasn't finished this is my department head. I'm going, okay, so
we have had departments that have actually just said, you will do this, and they are right on top of it. Mm-hmm. So they've taken it on themselves.
My big question is you will do this, and then the last half of that, which is or else, what? Mm-hmm. What is the or else that departments are typically?
What are we going to do with 1,500 people? Right now, we're feeling like it's so successful, and we really feel like some of those are probably going to be dealt with other efforts that we have going on. We definitely have some other initiatives. So 1,500 out of 12,000, I call that a success because, you know, the value that we're seeing out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mandatory, and they really should be taking it. But we've talked about, you know, talking about other faculty members that have come and their, you know, their positive response that they've had to it and, you know, actually walked away and thought, wow. This is really valuable. Thank you. So we're going to do a roadshow for that kind of stuff.
Well, our training is not mandatory, so we have a much harder sell on our hands. But the training is, we're quite frankly taking a grassroots effort with this, you know. It's out there. It's available for all of our faculty and staff to take. Our students are encouraged to take it as well. Some of our governance boards are taking a close look at it, and we're hoping that it'll roll out to be more specifically mandated for certain areas. I know that our CIO is pretty adamant that he's going to use that requirement to log into different access areas. He's taking that quite seriously, especially regarding the confidentiality agreement. So some people are going to have to take it regardless.
Yes, sir, right here. Yeah.
You mentioned that this is an annual, or this is just one-time training, but there will be more courses, role-based, annual. I just wanted to confirm if that is the case.
So it is annual. Our requirement from ABOR, the auditors, was that it be annual. So we've rolled out that, you know, the first time we went big with it. It's 55 minutes, the three modules online, and an hour and a half if you come listen to me in person. But with the refresher, we've just started talking about it because that's coming up. We rolled this out in June. It's going to be time for us to start rolling that out. What we're going to do is we're going to start focusing on roles. We're going to start talking specifically to researchers and the data for which, you know, they need to be thinking about, the policies for which they need to be thinking about, the regulatory requirements. We'll take staff and we'll focus on, you know, those policies that are more in their control. So our refreshers will be more role-based in terms of that, and they'll be much shorter, 15 or 20 minutes.
I have a question here. Yeah.
So now that you've raised awareness, you're getting more feedback from your end users. So I have a two-part question. The first is, do you take that response directly into the information security office, or does it go through like a help desk kind of function? And the second question is, do you have a sophisticated incident response mechanism so that if an end user says, okay, I've been through your training, I think maybe I see something, do you have something sophisticated so that you can respond to that?
We're getting better. So the first part of the question, do we have, for anybody that didn't hear, do we have, do we take the questions directly or do we go through like a help desk? Both. So part of the training is, you know, helping them understand what role we play and giving them our contact information, because we always say, if all else fails, call us. We'll find who. Because many times it's about the technology aspect, the password, the antivirus, those kind of things. But we also, we are very blessed to have an organization on our campus, 24/7 IT Support Center, that will support our campus community, faculty, staff, and students at work and at home. 24/7. So, you know, we try and encourage them to call them first, and if they, you know, can't resolve the issue, they can call us. Second part of the question was about incident and if we have a formal process for handling incidents. We are working on that because we are starting to get, you know, as you get more educated users out there, and that includes, you know, from end users to the IT who now know all their users are going to come to them and then they need to do something with it. We are heavily working on, you know, a repeatable process, you know, standardized ways to intake and then, you know, triaging. And we know pretty easily how to triage. The number one thing for us sometimes is, tell me about your data, and then we'll go from there, you know, because to us, ultimately, it resolves around that data element. But we're working on that. And that's one thing we promised is to roll out a mailer to users that help them understand, because do I call you just with a virus? Do I, you know what I mean? What about if it's my home computer? It depends. It depends. Yeah. So,
at UWM, we get most of the calls directly to us. We do actually have a contact us form on our security website as well for those people who don't want to use our help desk. They come to us. And we answer them directly, and if it is something that needs to be investigated, because our office actually does that, we handle it right then and there. So the majority of the questions that we get don't go outside of our office.
Yes.
So with the online-only training that you have, do you build anything into that where they can contact you directly from the training? Or
repeat the question, yeah. So he was asking if for our online training, if, and I, particularly I think UWM, because they have all online training, is there a way to contact us? I know that we have, it's all over the place in our trainings, and it's also in on the web pages. But I'll let Tanya talk to that more.
We don't have an interactive training in that they can get a live response to a question, but of course we do have our contact information throughout the training, and it's available at the end as well. The current setup for our particular training is that the questions are at the end, and our training you have to get 100% to pass. We're tough. We don't care. We are tough. So, and you can take this training as many times as you want. You know, that's fine with us. We don't care. We won't tell anyone if you fail. But so there are a number of questions that come up, and again, they just call us and ask. And we require a minimum of 5 different trainings to be certified for the information and security certificate. And you have to take 3 of the information security and then 2 of the, you know, kind of ancillary trainings just to round things out a bit.
Okay. Time for about 2 more questions.
Okay. 2 more questions.
We'll try. Anyone else?
For the certificate program, what is it, as a person that gets it, what's it by them? Why do I want the certificate?
Well, you know, we want to make sure that people walked away with something tangible. That is so important to people. And our certificate is, quite frankly, gorgeous. It is. I see them posted all over the place, and we really enjoy that. And I'm telling you, if there's a glitch, and every once in a while there is, and people think that they've completed it, they will let me know.
Oh, yeah.
They want their certificate. So it is valuable. And it looks good on their resume. They do put it there. And our researchers, again, are using it as a part of their data security plan. So having that piece of paper, whatever paper they print it on, because we don't print it, looks really good to them.
Anything
questions?
Else? Thank you.
Thank you.